Welcome to the Oxford Education Deanery Podcast. In this series, we explore the latest research from the Department of Education at the University of Oxford and discuss the real-world implications for teachers, parents, and policymakers. Each podcast is accompanied by a Deanery Digest, a short, plain language summary of the research, which can be downloaded from our website.
Welcome to the Oxford Education Deanery Podcast. I'm Joe Bullough, and I'm here with Professor Jenny Ingram and Dr. Stuart Cadwallader. Today we're discussing PISA, and both Stuart and Jenny have done an enormous amount of work analysing PISA performance in England, Wales and Northern Ireland. So we're looking forward to speaking about it. Welcome, Jenny and Stuart.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for having us.
So really excited to dig in here. Can we start a little bit with what motivated the work, how the work began?
So PISA is a large-scale international assessment that's been going on for many, many years now, since I think 2003 was the first one. And it's held every 3 years. And it's used to benchmark performance in maths, English and science, but not the academic maths, English and science that might be in our school curriculum, but the ability for students to use their maths, use their science and use their reading in real life, in contexts. So it's an assessment of 15-year-olds. In 2022, it involved 81 different countries and education systems, and it looked at what 15-year-olds could do with their mathematics that they'd learned in school or in their reading and in their science. And maths was a particular focus, so every three cycles they pick a focus, and it was maths in 2022, and in 2025 the focus will be in science.
Fantastic. Great summary. Thanks, Jenny. So now I wonder if we could talk a little bit about what you did in terms of analysis.
So this was a collaborative project, and we worked quite closely with Pearson. And Pearson were responsible for the sampling and the data collection side of things. And then with the huge amount of work that they put in recruiting schools and collecting the data, we were then responsible for analysing that data. And we analysed the data for England, Northern Ireland and Wales.
I mean, yeah, it's an enormous amount of data to sift through.
It's huge.
And I'm aware also, having sort of read through the digest, that you're looking at quite a few questions as well, not just sort of subject specific, but also quality of life. You're also looking at attitudes. And you're also comparatively looking not just at sort of 2022 in a sense, but also back at 2018 and comparing those. And then also looking at overseas progress in comparison to England and Northern Ireland and Wales as well. So a massive amount of data. I mean, how did you navigate that?
I think with a lot of help and guidance from the departments that were that wanted us to produce the reports. As you say, as long with the assessment results themselves, you've also got questionnaire data that you can look at, and then you can draw those different sort of responses to the questionnaire along with the performance data together in a variety of different ways. And you know, if anyone does want to go and look at the reports, they'll see that they're very, very, very long. But in actual fact, you know, there was so much more we could have done. There's so many different ways you could cut the data and compare the data that, you know, those reports are, you know, sort of drawing out some of the key points, really. And there's a lot that you can do with the data, much of which is actually publicly available now. So, you know, other people and other academics can also pick up this this very rich data source and analyze it.
Fantastic. And on top of that, you managed to put it into a digest, concise as well.
Indeed.
On top of,
very
some impressive.
Of it.
Well, so what I really want to dig into now, and we'll touch on some of the top line findings, but hopefully dig a little bit further in as well. What did you find through your analysis?
So if we start with the headlines, which are the ones that kind of meet, you see in the press when it's all released. So this is where we specifically looked at how well we did in mathematics or mathematical literacy, how well we did in science, how well we did in reading. And we looked at that for England, Northern Ireland and Wales. And you can see the comparisons are made with a group of countries. These might be countries where we've got a similar education system to them, or it might be countries that have got a similar history to the way that they've performed in PISA. So we can see how changes might happen over time.
Mm.
And then we also compare ourselves to high-performing countries, but those countries and education systems where actually we could learn from them. Some of the countries that take part, it would be difficult to translate what happened from that context.
Mm.
But if we look at our performance in mathematics in 2022, for England, that was significantly above the OECD average. And the OECD average is an average across 31 or 32 different countries and education systems.
Mm.
So England was significantly above in all of the curriculum areas, maths, reading and science. And we had Northern Ireland that was similar to the OECD average. And in Wales, it was slightly below the OECD average in the different subject areas.
Is there anything you want to add to that, Stuart?
I was just sort of thinking, looking back rather to kind of 2018. And of course, you know, we've had a global pandemic between now and then. And, you know, I don't think the data can tell us a huge amount of the extent of the impact of that pandemic. But you can see, obviously, that the PISA scores have declined internationally since 2018. So it does kind of give you a sense of the impact that the pandemic had on education worldwide.
And the decline in England, Northern Ireland and Wales was slightly less in some cases, or similar to it. So we weren't worse off than other countries in terms of the impact that the pandemic seems to have had on students' learning.
So that's really interesting as a headline. So I wonder if we could talk about the other headline findings, which were under sort of what you found in questions relating to sort of disaggregation of socioeconomic status and...
Yes, yeah, so that's one of the key things that we can learn from PISA. They do a huge amount of work on equity within education and different measures of equity in education. So one of the things that they look at is socioeconomic background, and another thing is gender. And so it's looking at differences between the way that boys and girls answer the questions on the different assessments. And you'll see that there is always a gap in England and Northern Ireland and Wales between the students with the highest socioeconomic profile and those with the lowest socioeconomic profile. But that gap is slightly narrower. Gap is smaller than it is in many countries and jurisdictions. And particularly in Wales, it was quite narrow this year. So actually, in terms of being an equitable system, we're making quite a lot of progress in that area, and PISA is one of the ways that we can bench that compared to other countries and jurisdictions. And in terms of gender, we're quite similar to the international patterns. So girls do quite well in the reading assignments and the reading assessments, whereas boys do really well in the mathematics assessments.
Mm.
And that gap is relatively narrow within the UK nations, but it's still something that we need to think about and need to address. But also there's a lot more in the data that we haven't yet unpicked that could tell us a little bit more about the nature of those differences that exist in the data.
Interesting. So fantastic. I'm going to move on to another finding, which is related to attitudes and life in school as well. I'm keen to dig a little bit more into that.
Yeah, certainly. So one of the things that the questionnaire that kind of goes alongside the PISA assessment does is ask students to kind of rate their life satisfaction from high to low on a sort of 1 to 10 point scale. Now, obviously, there's interesting things about that, about how people from different countries might use that scale differently, how students might, you know, decide on how to answer that question on any given day. So there's obviously limitations around that, but I still think it's a kind of a useful snapshot of how, you know, students, young people, 15-year-old students are kind of feeling in terms of their life satisfaction around the world. And it's in the three countries in the United Kingdom, actually, the way they respond to that scale, they report lower life satisfaction than the average across the OECD. So I think, you know, I think that's particularly true in England, in terms of giving the highest ratings, that is.
It might be worth just mentioning that students in Northern Ireland, there were quite a few that gave the highest rating, well, more than in England, and also in Wales, there were quite a few students who did say they were very satisfied with their lives. And we don't have that many students who are right at the bottom of the scale. So while you've got about a fifth of students in Northern Ireland saying they're really, really satisfied with their lives, you've got, it's about 6-7% saying that they're desperately unsatisfied with life. And that's actually quite a small proportion of students.
Okay, well, that's really fascinating information and useful in the sense to, even if it is the sort of own students' self-perception of life in school, to have some of that data. Okay, we're going to come on next to talk a little bit about sort of what this all essentially means. If you're a teacher, or if you're a parent or a civil servant, can you tell us a little bit about what your headlines would be for them?
I mean, I think the main headline that we can learn from this is that we're doing well. So our attainment in maths, reading and science, we're up there in the top of the countries. Even where we're similar to the OECD average, we're still a higher performing country within that within the 81 or the 82 countries that took part. What it can tell us is a little bit more about some of the subtleties within that. One of the things we learned from the questionnaire is that generally pupils in England, Northern Ireland and Wales feel safe. And they feel safe in school, and they feel safe going to and from school. They feel safe in their classrooms as well as the broader school environment. And that we come out quite well. We're very similar to the OECD average on those measures. Sometimes we're slightly above the OECD measures. So that's kind of reassuring to know that like it's 90-something percent for most of the questions. Pupils are saying that they feel safe in school.
That's a great indication.
I think it's interesting because the data does allow you to draw some sort of distinctions now. It asks about, for example, experiences of bullying, which I know is distinct from how safe you feel in school, and it might depend on what you define as bullying and how that varies across countries, which is why we don't like to make those international comparisons or measures like this. But I think around a fifth of students in England and Wales, and I think 16% in Northern Ireland, reported that they were made fun at school, and you know this is higher than the average across the OECD of 12%. And you know, I think there is a relationship between performance in PISA mathematics and whether you feel like you have experienced bullying. So all of these things, obviously, they have an impact on the school environment and you know, that student's sort of sense of well-being, I suppose, and that, you know, can manifest in how much they can engage with their schoolwork. I mean, that is something that, you know, that can be addressed at the level of the school and at the kind of culture of the school. And I know teachers and schools do a lot of work to try and address things like that.
I think belonging to school, a sense of belonging to school and belonging to the school community, that's another area where for a long time there's been a strong correlation between whether students feel they belong in school and their performance in assessments. And that's also true in PISA. If you look at the England, Northern Ireland and Wales data for sense of belonging, it's around 60 to 66% of students in England, Northern Ireland and Wales said that they felt that they belonged to their school community. But this is lower than the international average. So the OECD average for that was 75% of students. And we know that there is a relationship between a sense of belonging in school and performance in PISA.
Very interesting.
In terms of the assessments, there are different aspects of the assessments. So, for example, in the mathematics, we did really well compared to internationally, which is where we can make strong international comparisons. We did really well at data and uncertainty and probability and those sorts of questions. So reading and interpreting graphs from real life situations that are about data, we did relatively well on that. But we were relatively weak on anything that involved visualization or space and shape or geometry. And that's an area of weakness for us. So what we can learn is, well, what's going on that means that, given that we are a country performing at this particular level, why are we weaker in geometry but stronger in data? And that's not to say do less data, because data is really, really important. But actually, well, what could we do to help with the geometry side of things? And similarly, we'll do the same thing when we look at science in 2025, that we'll be able to look at lots of different aspects of science and just see what we're particularly good at and what areas we might want to work on.
interesting to hear that being safe in school is a really important factor in terms of educational outcomes too. And very interesting to hear about the assessment of maths and the different sort of areas of, and I think that that carries implications for how a curriculum is set up, right? Stuart, would you like to add anything to sort of takeaways for stakeholders?
Yeah, I suppose one of the things I would say is that I think there's obviously great value in this and about understanding, being able to look at those kind of national pictures in the first instance and even consider the international picture overall and think about, you know, what it's like in the school in which you work. But I think obviously you need to be really careful not to kind of overgeneralize some of these things. So one of the things that I always think is really important and is there's a risk where, you know, you get the PISA league table where you see where countries rank relative to each other and you look at it a bit like, I don't know, the Premier League table or something like, oh, this country's done better than this country. But actually there's obviously these results are based on samples of students and in most cases, I think some countries do their entire country, but they're based on samples of 15-year-olds. So there's error within those. And a lot of the time, the actual rank orderings themselves are within that error. So I'd be a bit cautious about sort of looking to countries that are just a few places above the nations in the UK and trying to draw too much to them, because there is a lot of kind of noise in the data. I mean, that's not to say that I don't think this is very valuable, but I guess it's information that we should all use responsibly is what I'm saying.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think we've had a few times in policy, both overseas in the UK, we want to be X in number in the PISA table. And yes. Okay. So the important caveat then.
It's also worth talking about kind of the nature of the sample, because obviously the samples for each of the three UK nations, you try to draw as representative a sample as possible. And there's a really, you know, there's a huge amount of effort goes into that, both at the OECD level and at the Pearson level to make that representative sample. But of course, it's really hard. Some schools can't take part for various reasons. And we sort of did a lot of work actually when we realized that the sample, the response rate wasn't quite where we'd want it to be. Jenny did a lot of work on something called a non-response bias analysis. So I wonder, Jenny, if there's anything, you know, there's a few little things in that might limit the extent to which we feel really confident in interpreting the findings.
Yeah, so what we did was we looked at the sample that we were aiming to get and we compared it to the sample that we actually got. And we had to use the data available to us. And that varied across England, Northern Ireland and Wales. So what we did was we looked, if we had prior attainment data, we looked at that. If we had socioeconomic data, for example, free school meal eligibility, we looked at that. We looked at gender. And what we found for particularly England and to quite a lot of extent Northern Ireland as well, our samples had slightly higher prior attainment than the sample that we were aiming for. So there is a little bit of a caveat in terms of interpreting PISA in that our sample was slightly higher attaining. We don't really know the impact of that on the findings, but it is an area where actually this could influence the results that we got. The one thing that I think we really need to emphasise at this point is how grateful we were to the pupils and the schools that took part in PISA. It was their hard work. It was the students that took these assessments and the questionnaires. And it's a lot of work for schools and it's a lot of work for pupils. And without this data, we couldn't be able to look at how we're doing and to reach these conclusions and make change and influence things going ahead.
Yeah, I completely echo that, because obviously the students don't get their own results back. That's not the nature of the assessment. The assessment is kind of these sort of large-scale education systems. But obviously they're contributing massively to understanding of how education's working nationally and internationally. So, yeah, we're extremely grateful for their contribution to the research.
Well, that's really important to relay that. Thanks. But thank you so much. It's a real pleasure to have you on the podcast today, Jenny and Stuart. Thanks for joining.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the Oxford Education Deanery podcast. To find out more about the research featured in today's episode and everything else the Deanery has to offer, visit our website and sign up to our newsletter. You'll find the links in the show notes.